Hi there, listeners, and welcome to episode 5 of Upscale. I'm going to be joined by Patrick Sinyolu, the founder of Black Matter London. Super interesting guy. Black Matter London is basically on a mission to help the black community to succeed through supporting BAME individuals and starting their own ventures and startups. They recently partnered with Google Startup and hosted an event at their campus in London, basically just inspiring young entrepreneurs in how to get their business off the ground and giving them guidance and advice. There's tons of other initiatives and projects that they're going to be working on. And hope you enjoy listening. How's your day been? All good?
Yeah, it's been all right. Quite busy. So I was literally, that's why I had to push our call back by 30 minutes. Just had a lot of stuff to run around to do. So, but yeah, it's all good. It's always good.
Better to be busy than bored though, isn't it?
Exactly. During a time like this as well.
It's the only thing that pretty much keeps you sane, doesn't it? I mean, if we didn't have work, I think it'd be, well, it's pretty much like Groundhog Day anyway.
Yeah. I think slow on your end, or is it quite, is it picking up?
In all honesty, I hate saying it because everyone's in a different situation at the moment, but we have never been busier. Like in the last, since last February, we've been home working. And this time last year, there were 6 of us on the team. And there's now, well, right now there's 20, but as of the end of this month, there'll be like 22 of us, which is crazy to think that we've managed to do that in a pandemic. But, you know, it's one of those things where luckily we could carry on working. It's not the same for a lot of other industries. And
yeah.
Very difficult, you know, what to do. But no, I'm really looking forward to things easing off. I'm losing my mind a little bit.
You do have an office, don't you guys?
We've got a shared space in Bournemouth, but I mean, none of us have worked from there since this time last year, which is just crazy. So wow. I quite like working from home. I said to the guys the other day, what's your thoughts on, you know, home working and that sort of thing? And their feedback was, initially they were like really skeptical, thinking, oh my god, I'm going to be sat in my lounge working, or, you know, however they've kind of got to get used to it. But literally every single one of them said that they actually don't want to go back to a studio environment, which I thought was quite interesting. And the majority of the people that have started working for us have obviously started during lockdown, so we've never actually worked in the same room as them. But we use things like Slack and Hubstaff and time tracking tools and stuff, so that we're always communicating with each other, and it seems to work for us. But I mean, if you take like massive corporations, like international companies who've got like tens of thousands of employees and they're managing to homework, I'm sure 22 of us can manage it.
How's that sort of sounds like I'm interviewed you. How's that changed in terms of team? Because how long have you been up and running?
So we've been going for 7 years.
So how's that changed that dynamic for you guys then?
I mean, to be honest, when we were in the studio, we time track everything using a program called Hubstaff for like our invoicing and team management and stuff.
Yeah.
We use Slack for internal comms, which is, you know, it's instantaneous and you can call people, and we have team calls every morning and that sort of thing. And then we use project management systems where the guys drop in tasks and we kind of communicate with our clients on there. And I kind of found even when we were in the studio, people just put their headphones on and then they get on with the work. And it's, in all honesty, it's not really much different. Whether we're sat next to each other or if we're in another country, I don't think it would really make much of a difference. So how has it changed? I think the only thing is that it's reduced the amount of travel time, like from going to clients to meet with them, as well as actually getting to the office. Because if you think, I could do like 12 calls, Zoom calls, comfortably, whereas, you know, you can only really go and have one proper meeting a day if you've got to go up to London or something like that. So that's made things much more productive. I'm kind of hoping that people are going to keep that mentality when we come out the other side of lockdown.
Yeah. I reckon they will, because it's easier for everyone, isn't it?
I think so. Some people think that it's if you're like got an old school mentality and you want to be in the same room and shake someone's hand, I get that, and it's great and everything, but there isn't actually really anything more. It doesn't you know, make anything more productive, I don't think. Mm-hmm. Anyway, enough about me. So obviously I wanted to get you on and just talk about what you're doing with Black Matter London. So I suppose my first question, so that we can properly kind of introduce you to everyone and tell everyone what you do and what the initiative is all about, is do you want to just tell us a bit about Black Matter and kind of why you started it?
I think the why is in the name. I think around the time, it was around maybe 2014, and you know, that was the time, well, it's happened numerous times, but that was the time a bit of attention was brought to what was going on in America. Mm-hmm. I think Sandra Bland had just been killed by the police at a traffic stop. And one thing that I noticed was a common theme, and even though it was getting coverage on the media and stuff, there was just this kind of silence around the value of what Black Lives actually meant. And obviously, the Black Lives Matter movement was kind of born, I think, years before that or whenever. But there was just the silence around the value of Black Lives. I think they were just being treated, you know, recklessly. It was almost like every week you turn on the TV and you'd kind of see black bodies just, you know, being killed. And it, for me, that was horrifying. And for me, again, I sat back and I thought, why is this going on? Why the silence? Why no sort of kind of outrage, you know, at what's going on? And for me, I realized, you know, on one hand, we live in kind of a capitalist society, right? Where money speaks, essentially. And I realized the reason, you know, everyone was able to keep silent on this, you know, what was going on, is because in terms of having an economic voice, Black people don't around the world. And I say that, and I say that, and I think about if, for example, Chinese students, just for the sake of it, were being killed on the streets of America, the Chinese president is going to stand up and say, hey, that can't happen. Otherwise, there's going to be repercussions. We're going to stop trading with you. We're going to stop doing this. We're going to stop doing that. Yeah. And for me, I realized, you know, in that moment, there isn't the reason why people allow this to persist, and there's not this kind of let's take this thing seriously, is because of that economic value. And for me, it was about how do I create something where we have an economic seat at the table, where we bring value to the table. So for me, it was kind of a simple solution. I looked at how do these kind of conglomerates and larger companies operate? You know, they're multinational, multi-brand, multi-product. So for me, it was about kind of creating this type of ecosystem where there is value and there is economic value being created, so that, for example, when we read headlines of Raheem Sterling being racially abused, you know, by, you know, written by the Daily Mail, you know, sorry, in the newspapers of the Daily Mail, that doesn't have to be our only news source. We can go over to, you know, this kind of publication that is promoting and lifting up Raheem Sterling, if that kind of makes sense. So that was the theory behind it, that, you know, we've almost become, you know, our voices are being essentially, you know, do you understand what I mean? I think that was the kind of the story behind it. But in simple terms, it's to me, the purpose and why I'm here is to essentially help the Black community succeed. That's really it in one line.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And just even hearing about you talk about it then, the kind of passion that you've got behind it is honestly inspiring. And it's so interesting for me. I feel, when I was talking to you, I actually feel a bit, not naive to the situation, but people go about their day-to-day lives, and I think these things happen in the news, and it's become so common that you become so numbed to it. And I think it's something that's always gone on, but like you say, people are speaking out about it. There's people like yourself that are trying to create change. I think the most interesting thing for me was when you were talking about people having a seat at the table. And I think something that I found really interesting was when you were saying, I can't remember what exact wording that you put it in, but it was something about not being in the room. You know, you were saying about having if you've got people that have got background, their families, obviously that their parents have started their own businesses and so on and so forth, there's that whole cultural kind of entrepreneurial background and kind of inbred into them. But for the people that you're working with and supporting, they might not have that kind of heritage behind them.
I think I slightly remember what you were saying. I think it was around minority founders and entrepreneurs, and how there's more need for business support, because when you know you're looking to start a business, was that around it, the startup capital?
Yeah, I can't remember. There was a phrase that you said, but anyway, no, I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, because you know, for when kind of minority founders are looking for startup capital, you know, the kind of friends and family approach, which you know everyone relies on to kind of get their business on the ground, because you can't just walk into a bank, have an idea, and get a loan the next day. Yeah. It's kind of off limits for people from minority backgrounds, and the reason being that, you know, when you look at, you know, the average white household, I think a survey was done in like 2009 or something, has around £200,000 in assets, while the kind of Black Caribbean household has about 76,000 in assets. And that disparity is huge in terms of black and minority founders and families not having that resource to just say, oh, here's 10 grand, go start a business. That wealth isn't there to just go and start that. Then you start to look at, hey, okay, I can't maybe get it from the friends and family approach. Maybe I look at venture funding, and then the statistics for that's even worse. I think it's like up to like 1% of venture capital investment in the UK went to like black entrepreneurs in the last 10 years.
Which is staggering. It's just like, you can't even believe that that's a statistic.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I think that is staggering. And I mean, from what you've described there, obviously we've identified what the issue is, or what the issue has been in the past, and why you started Black Matter. Do you want to maybe just tell us a bit more about what you guys are doing to improve that? I mean, the Google event that you did, the Black Founders and Entrepreneurs Evening, I mean, that was really interesting. And I think the informality of it, from a kind of conversational, more fluid point of view than a normal kind of networking event, I think was really cool. I really liked the idea of that. Tell us a bit about that, like behind the idea.
Thank you. Actually, I haven't even said thank you for having me on, but thank you. Thank you for that. So the evening was kind of, the reason why I kind of set it up was because I realized I'd been going to like a few networking events here and there, and I'm not really, I know like business, you have to network, and I'm not really the kind of networking person. And a lot of the networking events that I did go to, the people on stage didn't have, or weren't coming from the same lived experience I was, in terms of those stats I just read out to you beforehand. So in terms of getting their startups off the ground, amazing, they were able to do that through maybe the help of family, through the help of friends, through the help of venture capital, that sort of thing. Whereas there wasn't like networking events. They are out there, it's not like they don't exist. I wasn't hearing that, and for me, I wanted to create something where me 10 years or whatever and trying to figure out this entrepreneurship thing would be able to go to something like that, see people that look like me on that stage talking about the backgrounds they've come from and how they did it. So we put together this event with these amazing entrepreneurs. Like, you know, it was amazing. One was Jamelia Donaldson. She has a hair care subscription box company called Treasure Chest. The other was Andy Iman. He's a kind of MD at Backstage Capital, which is a accelerator program for people of color. And then Urena, who's the founder of a fic tech company, a tech savings app called Cashmere. And the reason why it was amazing is because these three individuals had stories, and they all had different starts. So for Jamila, take for example, like she had to bootstrap. She was working her normal 9-to-5 job and saving the money from that and reinvesting into her business. That's how she did it. You take people like Urena, for example, who I think she did exactly the same thing. And Andy, he did exactly the same thing. So having these people on stage telling these stories, and you know, it wasn't like, oh yeah, you know, just had this kind of rich friend and came from this family, and
like Donald Trump, you know, I received a small loan of $1 million from my father.
And that's no knock to people that have the opportunity and privilege to do those things and have access to those things. Kudos to them. Like that's not even a knock. I think where this event was coming from was, hey, I don't know how to get this business off the ground. How can you help? So we tried to structure the evening starting from, you know, how do you get an idea? Like, how does an idea come to you? How do I build this idea out? How do I, you know, find the market for this idea? Then we moved on to sales and marketing. Like, how do I market this idea? How do I be innovative with my marketing? Things like that. And it's like, that evening was, even if you weren't a Black founder or a Black entrepreneur, like, you would still have benefited from it. But the focus was on that particular community because of, you know, things I've mentioned. And yeah, for me, it was just about bringing, again, that unity, because I realized in this kind of create this ecosystem is we need a network. So I need to know entrepreneurs within my network that cater, and I'm speaking independently of me in that sense. So if I came to the event as an entrepreneur, I want to connect with people. I do, for example, Black hair care products. Yeah. I need to connect with someone that, you know, maybe does like Jamila, that does a hair care subscription box for Black women. Do you understand what I mean? Like,
yeah,
those need to connect in that room, in that point in time. And the funniest thing is there were people like that. I heard stories, like, you know, as I was moving around, like, there were people telling me about what they were doing, and I was like, wow, this is amazing, because these products you're building cater to a specific community of people. So if you'd gone to a networking event that was like TechCrunch, for example, actually TechCrunch is kind of a networking event, but
I know,
if you'd gone to someone like that, you wouldn't have met the likelihood you might have but the likelihood of meeting someone that's catering to finding synergies in your business is very, very slim. So yeah, it was that was the why, seeing those moments happen where people just started to connect, and people, for me, it was seeing people connect. Like, that's the kind of joy I got out of it.
You can kind of see that. I mean, I remember when I was going through your website and having a look at some of the footage from the evening, it doesn't look like your normal type of event. And it just seems a lot more open. Like, if you want to ask a question or get involved or go up and talk to someone, and I don't know, I think it's something that misses from a lot of events, because I remember my first office, we were in this place called, I can't remember what it's called, this workspace. And we used to get a lot of talkers come in, and it'd be the same story about the same thing, and, you know, the same sort of entrepreneurial journey, but it never really spoke to me about, you know, me in this tiny little office that had a leaky ceiling in the corner and a bucket kind of catching the rainwater and that sort of thing. But everyone's got their own journey. So no, I thought that was great. Have you got any plans to do another event? I mean, obviously COVID's been a massive, massive hit in terms of hosting events.
I mean, there's this amazing company called Unboxed specialize in a multitude of stuff, but one of the things we're looking at is with you guys is obviously building this kind of virtual experience platform.
Just to kind of let the listeners know, is the reason that I met Patrick was through was through the website, and you obviously got in touch with us. I think you saw the Rucker case study.
Amazing Rucker, like, amazing company.
I mean, that was crazy. That was our first proper full CGI immersive event, and the response was just incredible. It's been great. And people like yourself, though, that a part of that community and have got their own businesses, and they're so driven, and the ideas that they have are so unique. I mean,
do you know what I think it's as a result of when, and I was going to say this when I was talking about marketing and talking about the event, you're forced to be innovative because you don't have resources to make it. You don't have this massive marketing budget to make certain things happen. So you become innovative. You become, which is where I then see the superpower, and the superpower in being in from my community, because I see I'm able to, because certain doors and certain avenues I can't even knock on. I'm like, okay,
it's interesting that you say that. I mean, restricting yourself with a set criteria for things. And I completely agree. If you take away your options, usually the concept becomes better. And I remember it when we were at uni, they used to do a very similar thing, and they'd give you a very specific brief. You can do this, you can't do that, you can only do it in this format. And what you find is you have to kind of utilize what's in your arsenal in order to produce the best piece of work. And I think you find it in businesses, if you are restricted and you don't have funding, you need to prove a concept that it works and that it's viable and that it's, you know, it actually works as a business model before you then scale up and bring on a team and start raising funding. I think there's a not so much maybe in the UK, but in America, for instance, the idea of raising capital before, you know, just on a concept which hasn't even hit the ground running or hasn't actually done anything is what happens a lot of the time in Silicon Valley and stuff. Yeah. And, you know, you read about it all the time, and they've never actually turned a profit. They've been operating at a loss for like 3 to 5 years, which is just ridiculous. But you usually find if you can get a startup to work from scratch, from the ground up, with no funding, for example, or like these people that you had talking at the event, they're usually the ones that can stand the test of time.
Yeah, because it's tenacity, and it's that sheer will to make things happen. I think because you've almost been denied access and been denied a way in, it's crazy, right? Because it's almost proving ground of how much you want something. Like, how much do you want this to succeed? So when you're kind of, you have to go through all these barriers to break through, the likelihood of you getting there eventually and not making this thing work is very, very slim. It doesn't mean to say that you're going to 100% be successful when you get there, but because you've had to fight your way there, when you then get to your championship fight, you're going to go in prepared. And that's the thing. Some people burn out before they even get there. Some people give up. Some people walk away. And, you know, it's a story of perseverance. Most Black founders, the story is how they didn't give up, how they kept fighting. And I'm sure that's the same for most founders, most entrepreneurs anyway. But obviously there's that added layer of what those founders have to deal with in order to make it to that championship fight.
Yeah, you usually find that that's like a driving force. So I remember I was talking to my brother about this the other day, and we were saying, you know, what creates serial entrepreneurs, for instance, because, you know, most people, they would build a company, you get it to a point, you get offered to be bought out or exit, and then that would be that. But then you've got people like... you just have people that go back time and time again, and they'll start something else. And usually it's from some sort of deep rooted, just wanting to prove themselves, and kind of show that they can do something, and create something of themselves. And I think it's great. That's what you want, though. You want people that are going to change things and kind of develop on from the status quo. So no, I think it's
I was
great.
Reading there's a book called Built to Last. And it's about how to build a visionary company. And basically in what you're essentially saying, one thing I wanted to say was purpose. That's literally what it talks about. Like, you have to be a vision driven company, and it basically breaks down how to build a vision driven company. Like, when you're establishing a vision of your company, what's your core value? What's your core purpose? What's your big, big, audacious, hairy goal that you're trying to achieve? It mixes all of that in to give you what your vision is and what your kind of what, and that's the book kind of argues that's what carries you on. But it says that in order to build a visionary company, it needs to be a vision, a purpose, like core values that don't, that aren't easily eroded away. Like in 20, 30, 40 years time, are we still doing, are we, even if it becomes a competitive disadvantage, are we still going to carry on doing what we're doing?
Yeah. And it's interesting you say that. I mean, your tie with Google, I was listening to a podcast the other day with one of the founders, and he was basically talking about the campus mentality, and that was there, you know, like they have at their offices.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
he was basically saying that was part of their ethos right from the beginning, just because of the way that people can collaborate on campus. And I think it was saying that in the working, I'm going on a bit of a tangent, but it was basically saying within the working day, I think they give them like 20% of their time to do whatever they want. But the thing is, they're obviously taking on people that are at the top of their game. So their 20% of free time is most likely going to be developing whatever they're looking to do in their field. Because I mean, they employ like rocket scientists and all sorts of things. But just thought that was quite interesting. And like you said, if you can keep that core kind of value right the way through, I mean, it all goes down to branding, to be honest. But it's just getting those things set out from the offset. So no, I think that's really interesting. I've got to have a look at that book as well.
Yeah, it's a really good book. It's written by Collins and Porras.
Excellent. No, I'll have a look at that. So just going back to Black Meta then. Obviously, we've spoken about the Black Founders startup event that you did with Google. What other is I've seen you've got a couple of other projects and stuff that you guys are working on at the moment.
Yeah, so one of the other things that we're trying to build out is as we're on one podcast. So we're trying to go into the podcast space. For me, I have a theory that it's either going to be proved right or wrong in a few years. The podcast is the new media. That, you know, traditional media as we know it is eroding. TV, radio is dying, essentially. Social is coming into place. And I feel like podcast is going to be that new medium. So what we're trying to do to kind of capitalize on that opportunity is to create a podcast network, essentially. But beyond just creating a network, we're trying to build a podcast app that similarly works like Netflix for podcasts, essentially, where you have curated podcast content, only kind of quality podcasts on there. And as well,
there isn't really a dedicated platform for podcasts per se. Spotify for me, I mean, there's a few that I listen to on there, but it's not built for that as a primary function. So it kind of sits in the back, I feel, a little bit.
Problem as well is podcasters. Another kind of problem as well, beyond just solving that kind of dedicated platform, is podcasters aren't being paid to podcast. So what I want to be able to do is make podcasting a living, how people were able to become YouTubers and that sort of thing. You can become a podcaster. So what we're trying to build is basically a platform that essentially allows for the podcaster, and obviously it's for the advertiser as well. It's an amazing engagement a platform that drives massive engagement, because your listeners are engaged. Like, people that listen to podcasts aren't they listen to learn something. They don't just, when you're listening to a podcast, it's not like an idle listen, if that makes sense. You're listening intently, you know, whereas like with YouTube, you can just play it in the background,
And then you end up down some sort of weird hole and
exactly
watching cat videos or something like that. I love listening to podcasts. Obviously, we're doing podcasts now, but every single morning I go out for a walk and I listen to a podcast, whether it's there's a couple, what do I listen to? I've got Joe Rogan, I listen to Stuff You Should Know, Masters of Scale, that's quite interesting, it's by the guy, the founder of LinkedIn. But like you said, it's good to get an insight on other people's frame of mind and how they've kind of overcome things and just try and learn from it. I think definitely with people just being at home as well, there's only so many times that you can listen to your liked songs on Spotify and not blow your brains out.
It is.
So what are you calling the new platform? Have you come up with a name or anything?
For Voices. So we're calling it Voices. Essentially. So we're starting first with we're trying to create original content initially. In-house stuff, and then what we eventually want to do is start licensing these good podcasts that are out there. So being able to say, hey Will, we'd give you X amount of money per year, give us the exclusive rights to your podcast. The benefits for you are great, the benefits for the advertiser are great, and the benefits for us are great as well. And I think it's creating a new model that it's borrowing from the Spotify, Netflix type models that have gone before us, because it's using that freemium model as well. Then it's also using the Netflix curated model, where not everything, because at the moment as well, is you have everybody doing a podcast, like everyone and their mums got a podcast, which is great, which is amazing. It makes the market expand and grow even bigger. But what we're trying to do is get those quality ones in. So we're bringing you in for value, as opposed to you just do a podcast, let's grab you, the market is at the moment. It's not gated, essentially.
I think that's really interesting. I look forward to obviously you developing that and getting that launched.
Thank you.
So I'm just we're running out of time here, so I just got one more question I want to run through. So obviously Black Matter is all about entrepreneurship and for the BAME community. If you had any piece of advice for sort of young Black entrepreneurs, what do you think you'd want to say to them, or just kind of give them any words of wisdom that you've got?
I'd say have a purpose. I'd say have a purpose. Purpose drives everything. When you kind of know your purpose in what you're doing as an entrepreneur, not even as an entrepreneur, actually, before you become an entrepreneur, you're a person first. So have a purpose in your life, and it will trickle down to your entrepreneur, what you've decided to go into as an entrepreneur, because without a purpose, without a sense of direction, you think everything is fair game and you would only go into things just to make money. And that's not what this game's about. Because if you do come into this game trying to make money, you might make money, but you won't be satisfied, and might not make money and you'll think you failed. But find your purpose is my guiding star all the time. I'm guided by this belief, this innate belief, and I live that out as best as I can. I'm not perfect. That I want to help overall. I want to help people succeed. That's it. That for me is why I'm on this earth, is why I'm here.
Well, I think that's going to be the title of this podcast. I absolutely love that. Find your purpose. No, that's brilliant. And I think on that, that's a really good note for us to kind of wrap up. So thank you for your time, and look forward to seeing what you have in set for the future for us.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Excellent. Have a nice evening. Yeah. Thanks.
Bye.